You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.
Hi, and welcome to Spycast, from the secret files of the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. I'm Dr. Andrew Hammond, the museum's historian and curator. Every week, Spycast brings you conversations with practitioners, authors, and scholars who live in the world of global espionage. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please reach out to us at spycast@spymuseum.org. That's spycast@spymuseum.org. If you like what you hear, and even if you don't, please take a minute to review us on iTunes or whatever platform you listen on. We're always looking for ways to make Spycast better, and you can help.
Today we have a very unusual guest, accompanied by another very unusual guest. And I think I would like our guest to tell you about himself as we start out. First of all, let me ask you your name.
My name is Musab Hassan Youssef. This is my real name. Today I'm known in America as Joseph. I go by Joseph among my friends and people who don't know me or my background. In the past, I had a code name, The Green Prince, and that was limited to the Shin Bet, the Israeli intelligence service. Green because of the color of Islam, and Prince for being the son of top Hamas.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground right there. So let me explain just something to our listeners. You, in fact, were a young man, the son of a very prominent Hamas leader, and you, at some point in your journey, as it were chose to cooperate with the Israeli intelligence service, the Shin Bet. And you also underwent another transformation in your life, and that is that you actually rejected Islam and became a Christian. These are all very interesting facets of your life. But before we go on, let me just introduce your colleague. I wonder if you could just say something about yourself and your name.
Yeah, my name is Gonen. I was known in the Shin Bet as Captain Luai. I was in times Musab's handler in the Shin Bet, and also a manager in the area of Ramallah.
You were an Israeli intelligence officer.
That's correct.
In the Shin Bet service. And could you just say a word or two about Shin Bet? Many of our listeners may not be familiar with that service. They always hear us Mossad this and Mossad that. So maybe a word or two on Shin Bet would help us.
Right. Just to help the audience to understand, two big or two strong agencies, intelligence agencies in Israel. One is the Mossad, which is maybe equivalent to the CIA, and the other one is the Shin Bet, which is equivalent to the FBI. So I was in the, let's say, Israeli FBI.
And let me just ask you, you touched on the fact that you have been Mossad's what we would call a case officer or handler. Were you the original recruiter of Mossad? Were you the one who was in touch with him from the beginning?
Actually not. I met Mus'ab after he was recruited. In his book, Son of Hamas, he referred to all his handlers as Captain Luai, because for the readers, it is easier, you know, to know one name. But actually, I met him a few years after he was recruited, and we were working for a long time, for several years together.
And Mus'ab, I see that you've taken the extraordinary step of writing your life story. It's now, and just tell me, I understand the book has come out now in Europe, and it is appearing in this country. And I believe you said it's a bestseller in a number of countries. Could you just say something about the book?
Yes. The story had to be told because I am coming from two underground communities. The first community is the community of Hamas, a very complicated, secretive, underground community that even its members don't know about how the organization operates. I was born in that environment, in that organization, because my father is one of the founders and one of the top leaders of the movement. And from the other hand, I was one of the important Shin Bet agents, or let's say informative for the Shin Bet, and this is also underground secret society. Those two communities have the keys for the conflict in the Middle East, and to be involved in both communities at the same time, I thought that I had a very unique position to tell something different.
I think it is a very unique story. I have not read one which is so powerful in that regard. It's a very moving story. And I know you went as a young man, you you dealt with a number of these issues, both your Islamic religion and, of course, your fidelity at that point to Hamas, because your father was a member. And I think you touched on the fact that you were given the code name by Shin Bet of the Green Prince, simply because green being a color of Islam, and you were considered in effect a prince because your father was a founding member of Hamas.
Correct.
I would, let me just, so we can get to several points I think the listeners would be interested in. You went through some very, very difficult treatment at the hands of the Israeli authorities and Shin Bet. You had been involved in it looked like you were involved in aspects of the Intifada. Thank you. You also were seemed to be in possession of weapons at one point, but you made the decision, which is an extraordinary decision by anyone, to cooperate with the Shin Bet. Could you just tell us about what you believe now led you to make that decision?
First of all, the Shin Bet was my enemy for many reasons. For arresting my father many times, for arresting our people and Israel in general. And the IDF was my enemy as a kid, because I've seen lots of shooting and confrontation with Palestinian demonstrators in the street. Many people were killed. And as a child, I didn't know at that time what was going on. And I didn't know that Israel was fighting for its life. It was very difficult war for Israel, as it was very difficult situation for our people. But as a child, with all the propaganda in the Palestinian street, I hated the Shin Bet. And at some level, I wanted to take revenge from the Shin Bet and from any Israeli. I had lots of hate and lots of reasons to take revenge, as I said. Now I was I purchased guns and I wanted to use them, and I was arrested before I used them, which is I'm grateful that I was arrested before I got involved in any terrorist attacks during that time. And this will tell you that the Israeli Shin Bet had very strong intelligence to be able to arrest me before activating any type of terrorist attacks. Of course, I was tortured. Today, the situation is different. During that time, lots of attacks, lots of suicide bombing was going on, and Israel didn't know who's going to be the second suicide bomber. And somebody like me, to be the son of a top Hamas leader, purchasing guns, that was a very dangerous sign, and I didn't want to talk about it. And they had to put me in a very uncomfortable situation to force me to talk, because any late minute could cause the death of many Israeli civilians. So that was during that time. It was a very difficult time. Now the situation is different. I'm not saying that this is the only method that Israel used to get information from terrorists. There was an exceptional situation. And so that made me even have more hate against Israel. I want to take more revenge. During that time, the Shin Bet asked me to work for them. And I thought that that would be my golden opportunity to fool them and take my revenge from them, a big revenge. And I agreed to work for them, to work as a double agent and give information for Hamas and attack the Israeli Shin Bet from inside. This is why I agreed to work for the Shin Bet, but later on everything changed.
And I think that that's part of what I'm asking you. What changed? What? And I understand your story, and certainly growing up, the son of your father, who's a very respected figure who loved you very much, and you clearly loved and respected him. And your initial decision to work with Shin Bet was made for the reasons you just said, that you would be able to exact your revenge someday against Shin Bet. But at some point you changed. And that, I think, we would be very interested in knowing what led you to make that change.
Yes, this is a long story of transformation, and with lots of experience, many truths were revealed through my practical or through my experience on both sides. From one hand, I start to lose my trust and confidence with Hamas members after they tortured their own people. And from the other hand, all the propaganda against the Israeli Shin Bet and the Israeli government of being thirsty for the Palestinian blood became not more than a lie and propaganda to support some Palestinian corrupt politicians. Because through my experience with the Shin Bet, all I saw integrity. I could trust them, and even they knew that I was a dangerous agent. They still treat me well, and we worked together, and we got successful. They gave me lots of support to understand the situation, and down the road, the ideologies start to change, and the political agendas. And I reached the level, a level that I had moral responsibilities, because now the problem wasn't about Israel and Palestine. It became a problem about humanity and about morality. I was in a position to save many people's lives, including my father, including my people, including Israelis and Americans. So it was about humanity, and because of that, I had this ideology that was totally different than the ideology that I had when I was a child.
Hey everybody, today I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere, Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Mossab, you said that sometimes you provided information to Shin Bet about suicide bombers, but then you worried about what would be done to those Palestinians. Could you tell us something about that?
As I told you, I had my ideology and my beliefs as a Christian. I couldn't approve the killing even of a suicide bomber, while it can be justified easily. The other option of arresting them is very complicated. You want to think about the troops going behind the enemy lines in an area ruled by a different government, a different authority, and in a war time. In order to reach those suicide bombers, you will put troops' lives at risk. And if they successfully can reach their target, we're talking about a house full of explosives and bombs. So the easiest thing was to just drop a bomb on that house and finish this danger. Extremely dangerous. I didn't agree for killing them. And it was the Shin Bet said, okay, we can send the troops finally, but what about your safety? Because once we arrest those people, they will know that you give information about them, and you will be killed by any terrorist in the area. I still insist on that, and when they saw me insisting for this, we decided to arrest them. I'm not saying that I was a man of moralities and the Shin Bet didn't have moralities. I think the Shin Bet was thinking all the time about the safety of everybody, including myself, and easy, clean operation. So we end up arresting the guys, and they donated my name. They gave information that I put them in a safe house and give them money, and I was supporting them. So now that was part of the plan, to put them in a safe house to prepare for their arrest or assassination if necessary. And now I was in a position that, Israel doesn't tolerate somebody who helps suicide bombers. Now, how we're going to deal with this? And if I go to prison, I should spend long time in prison for helping and supporting, giving logistic support for suicide bombers. I was during that time involved in lots of operations in the area, that it wasn't a good idea to send me to prison just for cover. Every day I am out of the area, more suicide bombers will reach their targets and more civilians will die. So Gonin came with a brilliant idea of deceiving everybody, in fact, in this game. This is why I call the chapter the game, because everybody absolutely was deceived, including the Israeli troops and Hamas terrorists, even media, even maybe the Israeli government. And who knew about this game? just myself and a few people in the Shin Bet. The game was to bring all type of special forces undercover to surround the house where I supposed to be, my family house, and try to arrest me. After they came to the area and made sure that I cannot escape, they would bring tanks and helicopters with all type of troops that you can imagine. A war zone it became. In order to arrest me, and but the other plan that they didn't tell the IDF, they told the IDF that you're going to arrest a big terrorist who's supporting suicide bombers. This is the information that we're getting. He's the son of top Hamas leader. So prepare yourself now. All the special forces came to the area prepared if they have to shoot and arrest and kill. So. But the Shin Bet and Gonin didn't tell the troops that I will give my friend a sign 30 seconds before you get into the area, so he escapes. So we made the whole thing like a natural escape that I got absolutely lucky, because usually terrorists don't get lucky in those occasions. And I could escape from the area with the arrangement with my Shin Bet handler. And the troops came into the house, and they were trusting the Shin Bet that the terrorist in the house. And Gonen is with the forces assuring them that, you know, we have solid information that Mossab in the house, and we got to arrest him. So now they are calling my name, and I am not giving up. I'm not surrendering. And everybody start shooting at my house after they evacuated my family. Now all type of media, international media, is filming and broadcasting live the event while I'm in a safe house that was prepared before, watching TV and watching everything, you know, and sorry to say that, but eating chips, you know, and while everybody was expecting me to be killed in the house because all the shooting, and even they launch a missile into the house and it start to burn. And I'm watching all this live on TV somewhere and somewhere safe. So in this case, if you think about this logically, what happened in the street, the Palestinian streets, people freaked out and they start to demonstrate in the streets, getting mad why Israel is going to the house of top Hamas leader trying to kill his son. And all type of media was deceived, as I said. Even Israelis were deceived. All type of troops, you know, tanks, helicopters, soldiers who put their lives at risk. They had no idea that they were simply part of a game, a big game, to give me just a cover. And the production was very good, and I guarantee you that it was much better than what Hollywood can do. And we finally got the cover, and I became one of the most dangerous wanted fugitives of the Israeli Shin Bet that everybody was talking about, how I was lucky to escape absolute assassination. And this gave me opportunity to hang out with all type of fugitives and wanted people in the town, and end up carrying great operations. This is one of the stories in the book that I could talk about.
That's quite an extraordinary tale. Now, Gonen, you're described as the mastermind behind this, deceiving almost everybody, including your own government and the media. I wonder, you may want to comment on the story, but I wonder if you could just tell us a little something about what it was like for you in handling Mossab. You know, a young man that you've obviously come to respect and like, and knowing that in handling him, you were putting his life at risk at any given time.
Well, regarding to the story, I'm not allowed to talk about things that I did back in the Shin Bet. I can tell you that many times I had to put Musab's life in danger in order to prevent killing. The same group, terror group that he's talking about, was about to do a major attack during Shavuot holiday, a Jewish holiday in Israel. And, you know, just to think what would be the reaction, the Israeli reaction, if something like that happens. I want to remind that there was this big operation during the Second Intifada that started after a big attack during the Passover holiday in Netanya, in a hotel. So he saved and he prevented, you know, maybe a big clashes in the Middle East. Sending him to sometimes to what could be his death is very hard. When you deal with an agent, you get to know him. You know, maybe in the beginning it looks like you just play with someone in order to gather information. But after a day, two, three, a week, months that you work together, you get to know the person. And you need to decide, you know, where you bring yourself as a human being and when you bring yourself as a case officer. And it's a very hard decision. I think one reason why we had many successes in our area was that I didn't tell him, go do something. We were sitting together. We were talking about things. Mossab has a very, very good understanding of intelligence, very good understanding of Hamas and of the region. So it wasn't just a case officer coming and saying, hey, go bring this or go speak with that. We were talking. He had great ideas. Usually it was, you know, brainstorming together that brought the best results. And you have a very strong responsibility for the agent. And, you know, with all the stress, the terror, and you want the operation to be successful, and you know that he can be killed during the operation, it's a lot of stress. And many times, the same risk was on me. If Mossab gives me any kind of information and I need to go myself to a certain place to find someone, to send troops, he can also put my life in danger. He needs to know and to be sure that this is not, you know, just a setup and everything is okay. So this is some kind of mutual responsibility from both sides. A mutual trust in both sides that, yeah, it took time to build it. It's not 1 or 2 days, but as much as we built it during the time, I think we were very, very successful. And I must say that Mossab had his vision. When he says that he was against killing, he doesn't just say it, you know, in order the audience would like him or something like that. He was really against killing, and I think that he had this ability to make us also think about it. And when he gave us a very solid information and intelligence, we had the ability not to kill people, but to catch people and put them in prison. So this is something, you know, that I personally, and maybe I should say even the organization, was learning from Mossab.
We sometimes find it awkward, and Americans sometimes find it awkward to discuss religion. But I would just like to ask you, since I have read your story, was that shift, and I think you used the right word, transformation, you actually transformed yourself because you began reading about Christianity, going to Bible study and so forth. And was that part of what led you to make the decision to not try and get revenge about Shin Bet, but to totally change your life's course and take a different view of the world? In other words, was the religious conversion part of what went into your conversion to truly cooperate with Shin Bet and not simply seek your revenge?
Yes, in this position, all I can say that the ideology of loving my enemies that I learned from Jesus Christ teaching helped to give me ideological base for what I was doing. Because, in fact, I didn't have ideological identity, if I can call that. I grew up as an extremist Muslim who wanted, who had enough reasons to hate the Jewish people, because simply the God of Islam hates Jews. And so later on, when I had a different ideology that gave me the spirit to keep going, gave me it became my motivation. And this explains why we were very successful, why we used lots of wisdom, and why I had a strong motivation. Usually people who gets involved in spying for the enemies, let's say, they sell information for money. But in my case, it was ideological motivation. I was totally, I had a great conviction to keep going and support humanity on both sides.
You made a very clear point in your book that even if peace were to break out tomorrow between the Palestinians, Israel, say a Palestinian state, that you felt that it was part of humans that they would still find things to fight about. So, you know, whether someone should wear a veil or not wear a veil or whatever it was. And do you feel that is a, that's part of humanity, but do you also feel that Islam itself bears some of the seeds that foster that? You know, we look at Islam from this country, and most of us are not Islamic or have very limited experience with it. And we say, well, there's some extremists, some people who have gone to extreme ends for political reasons, for reasons of power and so forth. What is your view of that?
Yes, I know this is what I'm going to say is in this country, and maybe in many countries, is politically incorrect. But what I learned to say the truth no matter what. And I think this is the first important step for peace, that we tell people the truth. I've lived different lives, different religions, different cultures, and I've changed many hats and hoods in my life. I used to wear many different masks, and I hang out with all type of people, and I personally changed the gods. Working in intelligence opened my eyes for many things that normal people don't see in the normal life. And there are lots of things going on in the shadows that sometimes I say fortunately, but other times I say unfortunately that I learned about. This what makes my position look like extreme position, but I can defend what I'm saying. I believe in it. And even when I'm risking my life today to go against a wrong ideology like Islam, I simply willing to pay the price for the next generation. Somebody had to step out and say, this is right, this is wrong. And I know the ideology of Islam is the wrong ideology. And if I want to connect this to my experience in intelligence, I would say that Islam is a perfect lie. And in intelligence, in order to create a perfect lie, you bring the lie, you wrap it with lots of layers of truths, facts, and morals, and you make from it a perfect lie. I myself was a lie to many of my friends. Yes, maybe I wasn't a bad lie because I was doing a very important job through those covers that I had, but the Shembet and myself had to wrap myself with lots of layers of facts, truths that made everything looks real and perfect, that everybody would never even get suspicious that I was working for the Shembet. And the evil of this world, the powers of darkness, also use the same strategy of using ignorance and lack of information, lack of experience of many humans, and try to deceive them. Simply an ignorant person 1400 years ago said something wrong. People believed in him, and he wrapped his lie with lots of morals. And I believe that Islam is the biggest lie in human history. At least, even if other ideologies are lies and somebody wants to argue for this reason, I say, okay, but at least I believe that Islam is a bad lie.
Well, you've, you know, throughout your life, and you're still a young man, you've taken great risks, working, even trying to do things for Hamas at one point and oppose the Israelis, and then working with Shembet was a tremendous risk. And I think even now, you are taking great risks. You are being outspoken. You are trying to speak the truth, and you're obviously speaking with passion. And I would just ask you, Gonen, you have been with him now for how long?
I know Musab since 1998, but we were working together since 2000 until 2005.
2005. So you've certainly seen Musab, and his clearly comes across as a person of great conviction and willing to take risks. It's my understanding that there is upcoming at some point some sort of hearing with the United States government that you have sought political asylum in our country. Do you feel that if he were not granted political asylum, would you see that he would be at greater risk, certainly going back to his own country, but even not being able to settle here?
No doubt. I think that the only place that can be safe for him is the United States. And even in the United States, when I say safe, is not, you know, living a just regular life. Is living and watching his back all the time. Because even in the United States, there are some dangers, but much less than in any other country in the world. If Musab has to come back to Israel or to the West Bank, he would be killed immediately. Because, you know, when the book was published, Al-Qaeda announced a death sentence, because what is written in the book, in the Muslim world in general, they will kill him just because he revealed what he revealed in the book. It is very easy for one extremist to cross the wall, you know, from one side, from the West Bank into Israel and reach him. In Europe, it is very easy for extremists, Muslim extremists, to get him. We saw what happened in Netherlands, for example, with Theo van Gogh, that was murdered because of his views. And this is why I think that the United States would be the best place for him, unfortunately, to hide. It's not to live a regular life. And people maybe will ask themselves, okay, why is the United States? You know, what is the relation between Musab and the United States? He was working for Israel. But actually, in many cases, he saved not only Israeli's life, but also American lives. he was involved in revealing one of the most dangerous terror groups that were working in the West Bank, and they were behind one of the big attacks in the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. I just need to remind the audience that in this attack, 5 or 6 Americans were killed. Students, American students that came to study in the Hebrew University, they just went to eat lunch in the cafeteria in the university. Innocent people that were killed. And Mossab helped us reveal who was behind those killings and other killings. And this is why he's not just an Israeli hero. He's also an American hero. He's a humanity hero. And I think that this should be taken in consideration when thinking about letting him into the United States and stay in the United States.
I think you've in making the decisions you've made, you have separated yourself from your original community, but from your family as well. And I know in your society and in all societies, family is very important. And I know you describe in your book your last conversation with your father. It was a telephone conversation. He was in prison at the time. And I think at that point, you had left the Islam and become a Christian. And he still accepted you as a person and expressed his love for you. Have you had any contact, any communication at all since your break with Hamas and the Hamas cause? Or was that your last contact?
My last contact with him was 2 days before the release of my book. And it was a very difficult thing to tell him about my real identity. He trusted me as his best friend. In fact, I was the only person that he trusted. He fired his bodyguards. He didn't trust any Hamas leader of his locations or anything. I was the only person that he trusted me in his locations. And today he's in prison because practically I put him in prison. I approved his arrest and I gave up his location. Of course, in my eyes, this is not a betrayal because I protected his life when I sent him to jail. Most other Hamas leaders were assassinated. And I was in I had the tissues between bad and worse. In fact, most of my life when I was in that region, I wasn't choosing between good and bad. I was choosing between bad and worse. And when you choose bad, this is not the best thing. And for me, as a human being, as a son, a loyal son who loves his father, I had no option but to get him out of trouble by putting him in prison. And today he's still in prison since that moment. It has been 5 years now and he has one more year to spend. So now while he's in prison, I've lived with him all my life and he trusted me the most to simply by a phone conversation to reveal my true identity of working for the Shin Bet, his biggest enemies, that he was hiding, taking all the security measures to stay out of their eyes and intelligence. I simply told him they were very close, more than you thought. And this by itself is shocking truth for anybody. It's hard to believe, especially as I told you, it was a perfect lie. It was covered that even maybe he still doesn't believe what I told him was true. That was the last thing. But he knows if he goes back, he will understand that I saved his life. Because when he thinks about all his friends, they're gone. So if I practically had a relationship with the Shembet, and he was in a hide from the Shembet for 3 years, and I was the only person who knew where he was hiding. This explained to him that I was protecting him all the time. Even when he was arrested, the Shembet respected him a lot for my relationship with the Shembet, and they kept their promise of protecting my father because we were very good friends. This is the type of relationship that I had with who I used to believe that they are my enemies. And they were trustworthy, and this is the experience that I had for many years, that they had to sacrifice many things in order to keep our relationship. So that was very difficult. I'm sure it's shocking for my mother, it's shocking for my brothers. My sisters, they believe that somebody is putting pressure on me to say that I worked for the Shembet as a part of the Israeli propaganda, while the reality is totally different. This is not the best situation for the Shembet to reveal my identity and talk about some operations. I understand that this is very shocking, very difficult. Even sometimes I went through all this personally, and it's still difficult for me to understand everything.
Well, it's a very powerful story. Do you, is your story been translated? Is the book circulating in the Middle East? Have people that you knew, you mentioned, for example, I know you had a very close friend, Jamal. Yes. People like that, would you think they'll have had a chance to read your story in their own language?
Yes, we translated the book into Arabic. And the book is going to be available in 2 weeks to download for free from the internet. So they don't have even to buy it for free. I want them to read more about the story because there is a huge misunderstanding about intelligence work. Yes, I didn't want to reveal lots of the sensitive secrets that will help terrorists perform better against Israel and innocent people. But also I want them to understand that intelligence is a noble work. It's a great work that saves lots of lives. It's not like the military work. And all the time when you have intelligence, you have power. When you have information, you can avoid targeting civilians or making mistakes. And this is why it's a noble job. And there is a huge misunderstanding about intelligence in the Middle East, especially the Israeli intelligence. The goal is not to kill the enemy. The goal is to put an end for violence. And it's a war between brains more than a war between physical bodies. So I was very happy that we could translate this into Arabic. We have the book in Finnish, in English, in 14 other languages. It's already published in many countries.
The International Spy Museum is a full 501c3 non-profit. If you want to donate to the museum, or if you're local and would like to volunteer at the museum, please visit our website at spymuseum.org for more information.